If you read a synopsis of this film, it uses the choice of a coming of age story to illustrate its points. Of course, it also helps that this is based on a semi-autobiographical work by the author, who gives this very much a sense of reality. Culture aside, is what separates this from some of the other coming of age films that people may have seen?
Coming of age, yes, coming of age in during the Chinese Cultural Revolution already sets this movie apart from many other coming of age movies. So it anchors the movie in China in the 70s. And it really follows the story, the life, 4 years of two youths, two boys, and 17. Who come from bourgeois families that in those days were called reactionary, and families needed to be re-educated and see what life really is like in remote mountain villages with and share the life of peasants. And really, it's pretty grueling work for those young kids from the cities that were like that sent for a re-education. And the autobiographical fiction that this movie is really deriving from Dai Xihe, if I'm pronouncing this right, life. He was a youth that went there. He went to this mountain village. And of course, he made some adaptation. It is a fiction. But his voice is that of one of the two boys, the Ma, who's the narrator. And so we really feel that he observed what was going on. And most importantly, what comes out of this movie is a sense of joy, which you wouldn't expect. The two youths, found friendship, found love, what any 17-year-old would do in a place. Amidst the really grueling work and conditions they were thrown in, they managed to rise and shine and keep their joy. And that was because one was a musician, a very talented musician, studied music, violinist, and the other was the son of a dentist. But both of them liked to read. They liked to read a lot. They had quite an extensive knowledge, and they weren't going to give that up. And so instead of being totally re-educated and having their spirits crushed by the conditions they were in this remote village, having to live in very, bare-bone situation and being famished most of the time, they discovered a cache of forbidden books that another re-educated boy called Four Eyes, because he had glasses, was actually hiding. And so this became a treasure. So the books became a treasure. These were forbidden because they came from Western writers, Balzac, hence the title. Balzac is a French 19th-century writer, social. He was really describing the social context of the 19th-century bourgeois, and he was basically an observer of society and a satirical observer of society, but also a described, beauty in the 19th-century realist vein was very prolix with his words, so it create an atmosphere. So through these books, the kids who were stuck in this remote village could travel through their imagination to Paris, to France. They also read Dumas, The Count of Monte Cristo, and through that they had vivid descriptions of the Mediterranean blue sea. And how, the count who was stuck in a prison, in the Chateau d'If, like Alcatraz, managed to escape through his wits. And that, I guess, was them trying to survive and keep their spirits through their wits. So, for instance, when the village chief, who really doesn't know anything about high culture and how would he, you know, suspects anything coming from the city to be bourgeois and needed to be destroyed, saw the violin that the boy brought in. He wanted to destroy it, and saying that it was just a toy for bourgeois, you know, decadence. And they said, no, it actually is a musical instrument. And he started playing Mozart. And of course, you know, never heard that. But the book, it goes a long way to show that not to downplay the peasants, but to show that their ignorance made them not appreciative. But when they started listening to this Mozart that the boy was playing, they liked it. And they wanted to justify being allowed to listen to it. Mm-hmm. So quick thinking, the boy said, well, what's the title of this? Well, it's Mozart Thinking About Chairman Mao. And that made it okay.
Well,
and
of course.
They understood that they could play that system. And everybody enjoyed it, peasants alike. Mm-hmm. And another example was when they were reading those books and they found a way to narrate those books that they were enjoying from France, they readapted them in the Chinese context. So instead of having Ursule Mirouet, who's, or Le Père Goriot, which is an old miser in one of the Balzac books, he just gave it a Chinese twist. The story remained, and everybody enjoyed it tremendously. And so they became the official storytellers in the village. Mm. Rehashing the Western bourgeois narratives into the appropriate context, changing the titles and so, and that's when the little Chinese seamstress comes into the picture. Is that she? Of course, they both fall in love with her. She's a beauty of the village and the granddaughter of the tailor. And they both fall in love with her, but think she is not educated enough. So they proceed to teach her how to read and write and enthrall her with those narratives in secret. And, of course, the story unfolds from there.
Right.
But it's very charming.
Mm-hmm. You strip away revolutionary ideology. You strip away bourgeois culture, and you still find human beings living the same stories, telling each other the same stories, no matter where they're from or how much money they may have.
Yeah, it's appealing to a core humanity. Hmm. Yeah.
Just a quick segue, because now that I mentioned money, I do want to bring up that part of these Cinema International presentations and the discussions is also a little bit of fundraising.
Yes. We always have to think of that.
Right.
And indeed, Cinema International needs funding, needs your support to continue being able to provide the movies, because as soon as we show a movie like this in a theater to an audience that is a mix of students and the community, we need to pay licensing fees to the distributors.
Mm-hmm.
And these licensing fees are quite high, although I'm doing my best to try to find, distributors that give better deals. But it still hovers around $300 for a weekend show.
Which is quite a bit when you consider the shows are free to the public.
Yeah, they're free to the public. And so we really welcome donations. So the Office of Development will take your donation over the phone. If you come to our evenings, we have cards that you can take and send in. So we have definitely options for you if you want to contribute to keep our program going.
And it's not just for this film. This is ongoing.
It's all the time.
Right. Well,
we have 10 movies, 10, sometimes 11, but 10 movies per semester. That mm-hmm. makes 20 movies per year. So if you do the math, it's $6,000 per year that mm-hmm. we need to find.
Right.
And the university departments are good in helping, but they are squeezed, and so they give less and less. Not mm-hmm. that they don't want to. They want to, but they just can't. And so we really need help from outside sources.
This sounds like, again, a very layered, atmospheric film that is going to, I think, it sounds like it's going to be something that's, any discussion, this is going to pay off immensely.
Oh, yes. I think it's a good one for a discussion.
Sounds fantastic. Dr. St. Paul, thanks for stopping by to talk about the film.
It was my pleasure.